I know a guy.
Smoosh. Thank you, Malcolm. All right, Devosai, good morning. Let's begin. Our shir this morning is dedicated by Gabi and Shayna Cohn and family in memory of Avi Strimber, Avram Ben Kalman, Eliezer Alevi, Zichron Livrach. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, his neshama will have an aliyah. So let's pick up. So today's daf is Yud Ches 18. We left off on Yud Zayin Amud Beis. So actually, we left off in the first wide line. So the Gemara said, V'listnie bididei v'lukma. So the Gemara says, well, remember again, we're now discussing the last part of the Mishnah, which was the case of Rabbi Yoshua, where Rabbi Yoshua, even though Rabbi Yoshua said in the previous parak that he did not agree with the concept of Migo, but he said in this parak, in this particular case, he did agree with the case of Migo of what he called HaPesh Sha'asar Hu HaPesh Shehitir. So the Mishnah sets up a case as where a man says, I bought this land that I'm currently living on, I bought from your father. So the Gemara said that since we didn't know about it beforehand, and he's the one who brought up this information to begin with. Hapesha Asar, Hu Hapesha Hitir. However, again, if we knew about this information from Edim, then ultimately the individual is not believed to qualify the statement. So the Gemara is trying to figure out, why is it that the Gemara is now asking, why do we have to set this up as a case of what we'll call Reuven's father? Why can't we set it up as a case of where I purchased the field directly from Reuven? V'luxne b'didei v'lukma kigon sh'ach l'shtayim b'fanav v'achas p'shalo b'fanav. So let's listen to this. Why don't we set up the following case? It's a case of where I occupied and literally achla ate, enjoyed from the land for 2 years in front of Reuven, and 1 year not in front of Reuven. Look at Rashi. Rashi says over here, "V'lisne bedidei." It's the first wide line. Sa dezu shalcha haisa. The claim I'm making is that Reuven, this field was yours. So imyesh edim einor neeman. Va'af agav shachla shnei chazaka ukigon shahayu shtayim befanav va'achas shlo befanav. So set up the case in the following way: that I claim this Reuven, this field was yours, and I've been living on it for 3 years, 2 years in front of you, 1 year out of your presence. Then the Mishnah would be teaching me that if there are witnesses that say that Lemaisa the field was Reuven's, so my admission that it was Reuven's field would not be enough to solidify my claim. So the Gemara says, 1 second. So the Gemara says, Ukigon Shabarach, and the case would be where Reuven ran away, and that's why, again, the third year of Chazaka was observed not in the presence of Reuven, to which the Gemara says, Barach Machmas Mai. So first of all, let's clear this a little bit. Why exactly is it that Reuven is running away? Right? Where is he running from? What is he running to? Barach Machmas Nefashos. So if it's a case of where he's running away because he's in mortal danger, Pshita Dolo Mehemen. So we'll say, remember, what we're going to get into now is how Chazaka is established. Here's what we know. Chazaka is established by maintaining residence and usage, or residence and or usage, on a particular parcel of land for 3 years. The question we're going to deal with now is, do those 3 years have to be in the presence of the quote-unquote former owner or not? So now what the Gemara is suggesting is, let's set up the case of the Mishnah as a case in which I lived on the field for 3 years, 2 years when Reuven was present, and 1 year where Reuven wasn't there because he ran away. So the Gemara says, well, why did he run away? If he ran away because he was in mortal danger, so pshita delo mehemen, delo matzimachi. Now, both say, if somebody is living on your land, in order for you to prevent chazaka from occurring, what do you have to do? You have to make a macha. You have to object to their presence on your land. If you don't make a macha, then ultimately, again, that means silence. How does it go? Silence is acquiescence, right? So silence is acquiescence. Then you agree that you're the owner of the land. So the Gemara says, well, if Reuven ran away because he was in mortal danger, so then obviously I understand he could not lodge a macha. Why couldn't he lodge a macha? Because the Bible says, if he lodges a macha, if he lodges an objection, people are going to know where he is. Whoever he's running from, he obviously needs to be out of sight. No one can know where he is. And if he's running away because from running from creditors, the Bible says, running from creditors, he just needs to be out of this location. It's okay. It's okay if people know where he is. Then, Iboile. Excuse me. Sorry. Then Iboile Limchuye. Then he should have objected. The Kaimalon Machosh Shalom Befanov Havia Machon. Now, this is another interesting point, because we Paskin, that a macha made not in the presence of the individual who is currently inhabiting the land is considered to be a macha. Now, we will see this machlokas. So the question is, if Reuven is the supposed owner of the land, now, does he need to make a macha in my presence? I'm the guy who's living on the land right now, or not on my presence? So the Gemara says, we paskin, and we'll see this if this is halacha l'maisa or not, but we paskin that an objection made even not in the presence of the individual who is currently inhabiting the land is considered to be a proper macha, considered to be a proper objection. Now, the logic behind that, Rashi brings down over here, is because even if you lodge a macha, you lodge a complaint or an objection to the individual's residence on the land, not in their presence, one person hears it, and what happens, as the Gemara says, the chavra islay, your friend has a friend, and sure enough, what can we pretty much bank on? That whatever you say is going to reach the ears of the person who is currently inhabiting the land. So the Gemara says, Disnan, because we learned, Shalosh Arts Aratzos Artsos Lechazaka, they're considered to be three different geographic areas for Chazaka. For Chazaka. Yehuda, now what this means is there are considered to be three different geographic areas which are considered to be separate and distinct from one another for real estate purposes. What are they? Yehuda, Eva Hayardain, Vahagalio. So Yehuda, the tribal area of Yehuda, Eva Hayardain, the Transjordanian areas, and Galil, the north. So the Gemara says, Hayya bi Yehuda vehechsik begalil. So we'll say, for example, let's say I was in Yehuda and someone started living in my property in the Galil, or Bigalil, I was in the Galil, and someone started living in my property bi Yehuda, se'ina chazaka achiyehe imo b'medina. So the person's residence on my property cannot establish a chazaka for them until when? Until I am with that person in the same medina. Both say, so what's the logic there? The logic there is because since I'm not there, I don't have the ability to lodge the macha. Because I don't have the ability to lodge the macha, therefore you can't say silence is acquiescence, because that's not called the acquiescence silence. That's called perhaps a silence as a result of a lack of knowledge, or a silence because of a lack of proximity. In any event, it doesn't establish chazaka. Ache imo b'medina. Chazaka could only be established once what? Once I am in the same geographic area as the person who is currently living on my land. Vahavinanba. And we asked about this. Maika savra, what does this opinion hold? Ika savra macha shalo b'fanav hu macha. If you hold that a complaint lodged against the residence of someone who is currently inhabiting my land is considered to be a macha, meaning that I don't have to do it in his presence, I could just make the objection and assume that the objection will reach his ears, then afilu b'yehuda v'galil ma'ami. Then even if we are in different geographic areas, I'm in Yehuda, and my land and the squatter are in Galil, that should work. And if you say that an objection to someone's residence on my land is not good if it's not lodged in his complaint, if it's not lodged in his presence, then afilu Yehuda v'Yehuda namilo. Then I'll both say, it could be that what? Even if we're both in Yehuda, but what? We're not in close proximity, that such a macha will not be effective. In reality, we hold that an objection that is lodged not in the presence of a person who is currently inhabiting my land is in fact a good macha. They both say, now you have to understand something. The idea behind this also is two things. The idea of a macha also tells us that when you purchase a parcel of land, you must be incredibly careful to always keep your paperwork. Because the idea is somebody could always object to your purchase. The idea over here is that when you purchase a piece of land, we don't want to create the responsibility for the purchaser to always keep his paperwork. You know, again, like I said yesterday, this is before the digital age, where the truth is you can keep whatever you want and it doesn't really impact your quality of life. The idea over here is the 3 years of chazaka say that once you're there for 3 years, you're done. You have an uncontestable claim, which means you no longer have to go ahead and keep your shtar. But the idea is what? That the 3 years only begin when? From the time that the previous owner could have lodged a macha. But for example, if I bought a piece of land today, but the previous owner, quote unquote, I started living on it today, but the previous owner was in a faraway land that could not have lodged a macha, then by definition, those years that I'm living on the land do not count towards the chazak. Because that's what we're trying to figure out over here. And the ramification of this is a macha shelo b'fanav. So if you go ahead and you lodge a complaint not in the presence of the person who's currently inhabiting the land, does such a macha have any impact? So the Gemara says, in reality, we hold yes. Macha shelo b'fanav, have your macha. So the Gemara says, mas nisin b'shas chirum. Oh, and what is the Mishnah talking about? The Mishnah is talking about a time of danger. Mishnah is talking about a time of danger. Rashi says, b'shas chirum shanu, t'yocho lomar lo niglis li macha aso, she'eshmor eshtari. So in this case, of Osai, because it's a shas chirum, so word doesn't necessarily travel from one place to another. And therefore, a person could say, the person who's inhabiting the land could say, listen, I did not hear that there was a macha, and therefore I was not vigilant in guarding my shtar. Umayshna Yehuda v'Galil. So why does the Gemara single out Yehuda v'Galil? The Nakit, top of Yurches, the Stam Yehuda v'Galil k'shas chirum damu. So the Gemara is teaching us kind of Derech Agav that Yehuda and Galil are kind of always like in a time of danger, i.e. that word does not travel between Yehuda and Galil. I've listened mode. Rabbi Yoshua ba'omer lechavero. So we'll say, just you should know, the way we paskin in this situation is the Shulchan Aruch. This is in Choshen Mishpat. Simen Kuf Mem Vav Sif Aleph Paskins. Macha mivatelas hachazaka. I'm pausing here just for a moment because we stopped him at macha over here. So macha, an objection to someone's residence on land, so is mivatel the chazaka. Afilu micha hama'arer shelo b'fnei hamachzik. And this is true even if what? Even if the objector, so lodges his complaint not in the presence of the person who is currently inhabiting the land. Afilu hu b'medina acheres. Even if he's in a faraway land. Im shayaros mitsuyin b'neihem. As long as what? As long as there are caravans that travel between. Because mostly, what's the chap over there? If there are caravans that travel between, then what? Then we could be pretty sure that whatever I say over here is going to reach the ears of the person who is currently living on the land. V'day b'fnei beis, and he says it's enough. So that was it. So just so you should know, that's how we paskin. That macha shelo b'fanov, have your macha, an objection lodged, not in the presence of the person who is inhabiting the land, has the ability to undermine the chazon. Fine. Back to the Gemara. V'listni, but a second line on Yudchas Medale, v'listni, mod Rabbi Yeshua ba'omer lechavero, mana levisi mimcha, parati lecha shuneman. So we'll say, so again, why don't we change the case of the Mishnah? Instead of talking about a real estate case, why don't you say the following? That Rabbi Yeshua agrees in a case where I said to my friend, I borrowed a mana from you, but I paid you back. And the halacha would be what? Shehu ne'eman, right? That I'm believed. We're both say, why am I believed? Same idea. Pesha asar hu pesha hitir. I'm the one who brought this information to light. Therefore, I am believed to qualify it as well. No, he never said anything to me about borrowing money. I said, by the way, you should remember, I borrowed money from you, but I also paid you. Rabbi Yeshua says, I'm ne'eman, I'm believed. So why don't we use that as the case? I mean, you want to say, what the Gemara is saying over here is, Rabbi Yeshua is trying to illustrate a principle of pesha asra pesha hitir. Why don't we try to find the easiest case that highlights that you sowed, instead of choosing cases that may be a little bit more complicated and convoluted? So just use this money case, this lending case. The Gemara says, we can't use that case. Why? Mishum de kabayi l'misni seifa, because we want to bring down at the end of the Mishnah, im yesh edim shehu lava mimenu, if there are witnesses that I borrowed from Reuven, remember, if there are witnesses that I borrowed from Reuven, v'hu omer parativ, and I say that I repaid, ain't or ne'aman, I'm not believed. So the Gemara said, well, that would not be true. Why wouldn't that be true? V'ha kaimalan, hamalve es chaveiro be'idim ain't or tzarach lefarobin. Because we both say, we paskin, that just because you borrow money with witnesses, does not automatically require you to what? To repay with witnesses. Now this is a very important yisod. The idea over here is, if let's say I come along and I say to Reuven, I borrowed money from you and I repaid you. And witnesses come forward and testify to the fact that I borrowed money. So one would have thought that the fact that witnesses come forward and say that I borrowed money, but what? There's no subsequent testimony to say that I repaid the money means that I didn't repay it. Kamash on the Gemara says, that's not true. Why? Because the halacha is, just because you borrow with Edim, you need not repay with Edim. I will say, I want to be clear. Obviously, you could stipulate that in a loan agreement. You could stipulate that just as the loan is being made in front of witnesses, so too the loan is being made, it was repaid. In fact, you know, the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch Paskins, he says that if you lend money and repay money without witnesses, he says that the lender is over on Lifnei Iver Lo Sitei Michshol. Isn't that interesting? Why? He says because if you don't have testimony, if you don't have witnesses, you are opening the door for potential treachery. You're opening the door for lying. Therefore, he's keep asking that you should always have Edim by every loan and by every repayment. But in any event, he's giving like an Eitzah Tova. That's not the obligation. Therefore, we can't use this case in the Mishnah, because the case in the Mishnah, we need a case of where the presence of Edim would negate the claim. Therefore, the Gemara says, well, listen, but Rabbi Yoshua, so why don't we say, let's use the following case. Let's remember, we're just trying, keep your eye on the ball over here. What we're trying to figure out is the simplest case that Rabbi Yoshua could use in the Mishnah to illustrate the case of Apeshas or Apeshahitir. So someone gives another suggestion. Why don't we say the fact, why don't we say in the Mishnah, Mod Rabbi Yoshua, Ba'omer lechavero mana la'avicha biyadi. What about if the following case? Rabbi Yoshua agrees in a case where I say to Ruvain, your father lent me $1,000, v'hechaltiv pras, and I paid him back 500. Hechaltiv pras, I paid him back 500. Rashi says, v'hechaltiv pras, parativ chatzio, shuneman below shvua, hoil ve'in shor shachut lefan of dash, v'in rabu said, da'avagav, the mode of mixas potter, hoil ve'in otovo. So we'll say, again, this would be an interesting case. Why? Because lemais in this particular case over here, so remember, there are no witnesses that I borrowed any money from him, from Ruvain's father, and I'm molded that I paid back half of it, pesh asura pesh shehitir, therefore what? Only chai, even $500. So the Gemara says, well, one second, aliba diman. So who's the opinion of this reference? So we'll say, listen to this, this is a fascinating case. So the Gemara says, aliba diman, aliba dirabanan. If you want to say that this reflects the view of the Rabbanan would say, of course you're believed. You know why? Because you are a meshiv aveda. And we'll say, meshiv aveda means what? You are someone who is returning a lost object, i.e., the Rabbanan would say, look, in a case like this, you could have kept your mouth shut. You didn't have to say anything. And what happens if you didn't say anything? But if you didn't say anything, no one would have known the difference. You go ahead and you say, now there was a loan, you repaid 500, and you're still chayyeh for 500? It's almost like you're returning a lost object. It's like a gift. It's like a gift. So of course you're believed. It goes without saying that you're believed. E aliba de Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. And if you want to say it's like Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, ha'omar shvua boy. He requires what? He says that you're chayev a shvua. Now I will say, look at Rashi for just a moment. Aliba de man. So Rashi says, tonight pligi b'hamilsa b'shvuas. This is a machlokas in Maseches Shvuas. The Amr Rabbi Yoshua hakilo kechad minayuhu di krabanan. Ha'amri afilu tovo, v'zeh modem amiktsas, meshiv avedahu. So we'll say, listen to this. Now the Rabbanan Shita is even more dramatic. The Rabbanan Shita is that even if Ruvain were to claim against me and say, my father owed you $1,000. Excuse me, my father lent you $1,000. And I said, I paid him back 500, I owe him another 500. So the Rabbanan say that that's like returning a lost object. I don't have an obligation for shvua, no obligation to swear about the first 500. It's mamish like I'm returning a lost object. We'll explain what this means in just a little bit. This is not b'shvuas, I'm reading Rashi still. This is not b'shvuas, man ala avicha, man ala abba biyadecha, ein li biyadi ala chamishim dinar, pater mishum kimei shev aveda, umay ashmoin in Rabbi Yoshua, ba'ein shor shachat, afilu shor shachat lafan of nami ne'eman, v'yali with Rabbi Lazar, Yaakov kilotav alei nami hamashuba. So also listen to this. So the Gemara says like this. If you want to set up the case of Rabbi Yoshua in the Mishnah as dealing with a case of where I say to Ruvain, I borrowed $1,000 from your father and I already paid back 500, that Rabbi Yoshua says, oh, that I am believed. Why am I believed? Ha'pesha asar ha'pesha hitir. To which the Gemara says, well, one second, once you're getting into that case, you have just stumbled into a major machlokes. Because in a case like that, the Rabbanan hold, that it's like, of course you're believed, it's like Mesh Shavid, it's like you're returning a lost object. Not only that, the Rabbanan even say that in a case of what? Where let's say Ruvain came and he claimed against me. See, in Rabbi Yoshua's case, the Gemara is suggesting, I'm the one who's volunteering the information. The Rabbanan say, even if Ruvain came to me and said, hey, my father lent you $1,000, and I say, I paid him back 500, I'm another 500, even in that case, the Rabbanan say that it's Mesh Shavid, it's like returning a lost object. We'll discuss why. On the other hand, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says that no, that I'm chayef to take a shvuah. So who would Rabbi Yoshua exactly align himself with in this case? To which the Gemara goes weiter. The Sanyo, because we only know Brisa. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says, Pamim sha'adam nishba'al tanas atzmo. There are times that a person could swear as a result of something he himself said. So you both say, we normally think that Shavua is a result of what? Is a result of someone claiming against you. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says, there are times where you could swear as a result of something you said. Ketzad, what's an example of this? Mana la avicha biyadi. So if a person says, I say, I go to Reuven, I owe your father, I borrowed from your father $1,000, vechaltiv pras, and I gave him back 500, I sold him 500, hare zu nishba. Oh, so I have to, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says, I have to take an oath, I have to swear that I paid back the 500 already. So this is a case of nishba al tainas atzmo. It's a fascinating case. We'll get to Shavuos. We'll see all of these cases. So this is Nishba al tainas atzmo, where literally, again, because of something I said, of my own volition, I have to take a shavua. So the Gemara says, the Chum say, no. Eino ele kemesh shavaveda upatra. Absolutely not. If I am volunteering the information, no way. I don't have to take a shavua. Not only that, it's as if I'm returning a lost object. Well, so, you know, this lashon of returning a lost object means like, I'm like doing a tova. Right? It's like a chesed that I'm doing to go ahead and give back this extra money. Because truth is, I could have said absolutely nothing. I wouldn't have been chayiv for anything. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, lesley mesh shavaveda upatra. Does Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov not hold of this idea of mesh shavaveda upatra? Meaning, why does Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, in a case where I'm volunteering the information, why does he not agree that this is a case of Meshav Aveda, and therefore I would be Potter? To which the Gemara answers, because we'll say, remember, especially in this case where I'm volunteering the information, Rashi says, no one's even claiming against me. Amarav Betono Katon. Oh, what's the case over here? The case over here is where Lemaisa, there is someone who is claiming against him, but rather, again, it's a katan. So we'll say, so therefore, the Gemara is modifying the case. So where does Rabbi Eliezer say that you need a shvua? It's not a case just simply where I'm volunteering the information, but rather, there is the father, we'll call him, the father died. He has a minor son, Reuven, right? Or it's not a minor son. You know, a son who is a minor, right? A son who is a minor, right, Reuven? And that son, Reuven, is claiming against me that I borrowed $1,000 from his father. So there is a claim against me. That's why Rabbi Eliezer requires a shvua. So Gemara says, one second. But yet we learn that what you, when if a cheresh shota or katan, deaf mute, someone who is deranged or a minor, make a claim against an adult, what's the halacha, Rabbi Osai? Those claims never make sense. Those claims never trigger a shvua. So how could Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov say that I'm chayv a shvua based on the claim of a katan? I'll say, this is amazing. To which the Gemara says, my katan, gadol. I'll say, this is the beauty of Gemara, right? So what's a katan? A katan's a gadol. What? So the Gemara says, am I kari like katan? So what? I don't understand. Why are you calling him a katan? Oh, I'll tell you why. And I'll say, we've actually seen this concept before. De legabe mile de aviv katanhu. That regarding matters of his father, he is a katan, meaning that when it comes to matters of the estate of his father, then ultimately what? He's considered to be unsophisticated and therefore a katan. We'll say, Yishan, I've always thought that this Gemara also is an incredible, like, incredible statement in terms of like our relationships with our parents and our fathers also, that sometimes, you know, if a person's privileged to grow up with a true parental role model, you know, sometimes the greatest challenge in life is that you always feel like a katan legabe your father. You see what a father accomplished, you see what a father did, you see how a father was moser nefesh, how a father sacrificed, and then sometimes we look at like the way we live and the sacrifices we make. I might be a gadol, but the Gemara says, legabe mili da'aviv, Katanu, a very powerful Yisub. In any event, but in the halachic perspective, the Gemara says he's a gadol, and therefore, again, now let's follow this. He's a gadol, therefore his claim against me will go ahead and what? Will go ahead and trigger an obligation for shvua if I deny the claim. On the other hand, he's considered to be a katan, so to speak, because he's not well versed necessarily in matters of the estate of his father. But if that's the case, why does the Gemara call this a case of where I'm going to take a shvua as a result of something I said, the shvuah is not being undertaken. The shvuah is not being stated as a result of what I said. The shvuah is being undertaken for what purpose? Because someone else made a claim against me. To which the Gemara says, you're right, but it's a case of taina sachein v'hodas atzmo. It's a case of where there was a claim against me, but there was also a partial admission on my part. So that combination of someone's claim against me and my partial admission go ahead and create the obligation for shvuah. Supposed to listen to this. The Gemara says, one second, kuli ta'anasa. But that's most cases, right? I will say most cases are where someone's making a claim against me, and I am admitting part of the claim, some of the claim. That's what triggers a shvuah. Elohacha, Rabbi Gemara says like this. No, what's happening over here? I will say this is really, really interesting. So really, the machlokes is about Rabba. So the Gemara says, like, first of all, look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, so now in reality, we're going to say that it's like what we said before, that it's the case of where a katan is going ahead and claiming, meaning Ruvein, the katan, is claiming that I borrowed $1,000 from his father. We're going to see over here that Lemaisa, now the way we're understanding it is, it's a case of where the claimant, the person who's claiming that I borrowed money from his father, is actually a katan. So what are they arguing about? They're arguing in Rabba. Rabba said the following. Dama Rabba, mipnei ma amra Torah mod demiksas hatayne yeshava. Rabba said, now there's a case of mod demiksas. Mod demiksas means what? Right? Partial admission. So Reuven, a simple case. Reuven comes to me and says, I loaned you $1,000, you didn't pay me back. And I say, what? I paid $500. That's moda b'miksas. I admit the partial claim. Now, remember, what's interesting in this case is, I agree that I borrowed $1,000. I'm not contesting the loan amount. What I'm contesting are the terms of repayment, or the reality of repayment. I said, I've already repaid half of that loan. So what's the halacha? So the Gemara says, so why is it that if a person goes ahead and is modeh b'miktas, a person has a partial admission, the halacha is about to say you have to take a shvuah. You have to take a shvuah on the remaining half. So the Gemara says, chazaka, what's the logic? Listen to this. This is amazing. Chazaka, ein adameis panav efnei b'chovel. Now, both say, Chazal make a basic psychological assumption, which is what? That if somebody lent you money, you are not going to deny the entire claim in their presence. That's the assumption. Now, I'll just point out to you something very interesting. You know, there's a machlokas exactly why this is. Right? So, for example, Tosas actually quotes Rashi in Perak HaGozel and Baba Kama that says that the logic behind it is, De'ein ademeiz lefi sha'asa lo tova. So, what's interesting over here... So Machlokes Rashi Tosas. So Tosas Rashi says, "Ein Adamei is part of the Nechabachovo," means no one's that big of an ingrate. Many people might be ingrates, but you're not going to, if somebody lent you $1,000, you're not going to lie and say that Lemaisa, you're not going to be such an ingrate and say that nobody lent you money. So Rashi says there's a certain bottom for people's ungratefulness, that people are not going to sleep lower than that. Tosas says that's not the reason. Tosas says Ein Adamei is part of the Nechabachovo means that people could tell when you're lying. So a person fears that if they're telling a complete lie, that they're going to be discovered. So, all right, Machlokas Rashi tells us, in any event, everyone agrees that a borrower is not going to totally lie that the loan never happened in the front of his creditor. So the Gemara says, v'hai bikuli bai delichbari. In reality, what does he want to do? He would like to be able to go ahead and say that he doesn't owe any money. V'hai delo kafar le mishum dein mei is panav. So we'll say, and the reason he can't deny the whole claim is because, again, people don't lie in front of their creditor. However, ubekula by deludi, sinuyati Rabbi say, he wants to admit the whole thing. He wants to repay the whole thing. He doesn't have an interest in getting out of repayment. But what's the issue over here? V'hai delo udile kihechi delishtamitle. But I will say, what's the problem? The loan is due, and what's the issue? The debtor does not have the money. So he figures to himself, like, what? Then I'll go ahead, I'll just tell him, I paid you $500, and what will that do? That'll just buy him a little bit of time. Now, buy him a little bit of time to go ahead and repay the rest. So we'll say, so again, essentially the logic is like this, that when someone goes ahead and admits, part of Reuven says, I owe $1,000, and I say, I paid him back $500. The Gemara says, what we're concerned about is the psychology behind that claim. And the psychology behind that claim may be the following. Let's work backwards. I want to pay him back. I want to pay him back. But what's the issue? What's the issue? I don't have the money. So what would I like to do? What would I like to do? I want to push it off. So how would I ideally like to push it off? I say, I don't owe you anything. But people don't talk that way, because, right, a person's not going to lie, right, in a total fashion in front of their creditor. So instead, what do I do? What do I do? A little bit of like a white lie, right? I go ahead and instead I say, I paid you back $500, and I'll get you the other $500. So like this, I'm admitting that I owe you, I'm admitting that I want to pay, and I'm admitting that I want to pay the rest. I'm just buying myself a little bit of time. That's what Chazal are concerned about when you make a moda b'mitzas claim. We don't know, did you really pay back $500 or are you just stalling for time? So the only way to clarify that is what? The Gemara says, Avrahmana Amar Rami Shvua Alei Ki Hechi Delei Deludi Lei Bekulei. Therefore, again, what do we use? We use a Shvua. The Shvua, the oath, is the mechanism by which we ascertain the truthfulness of the claim. And one of two things is going to come out. Either you're going to swear that you paid back $500, in which case, if you took a shvuah that you paid back $500, we believe you, or the shvuah is going to break you. And what's going to happen? You're going to say, you know what? I didn't pay back anything. I'm really sorry. I want to pay you back, but I just need a little bit more time. But okay. But the shvuah ultimately, again, will make or break the claim. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, listen to this. So Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov suffer. This is so amazing. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov holds, lo shna bo, velo shna bibno, eino meis. So I will say, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says that lemaisa, this concept of ein adam meis panav bifnei balchovo, that a person will not lie, will not deny the entire claim in front of his creditor, applies to who? The creditor himself, as well as his son, his inheritors. And therefore, vehilchach lav meshiv avei dahavi. Therefore, I will say the assumption is that ein adam meis panav bifnei balchovo, and therefore a person might lie regarding paying back half of it. That applies to both the creditor as well as his son. Therefore, what? Therefore, it's not kimeshav, it's not like you're returning a lost object. In other words, it's a regular case of moda b'mitzas. So whether you're making the claim of partial payment to the actual creditor or to the son of the creditor, it's a case. We treat them both the same. They're both creditors. Therefore, again, the whole process of moda b'mitzas applies. And therefore, if you admit that you paid back half, you have to take a shura for the rest. On the other hand, the Rabbanan say no. Bohu de'ino meis. It's not true. When do we say ein adam meis panav bifnei balchovo? Or both say to who? To the creditor himself. However, again, aval bivno meis. But you know what? To the inheritor, to the son of the creditor, a person would have absolutely no problem lying. Right? Why? Because the truth is, he wasn't there. Right? Who is this schnook, right? You'll excuse my Latin, right? Who is he? Right? He's a nothing. I didn't do any business with him. So to that kind of person, a person would have no problem lying. Therefore, I will say, listen to this. Therefore, the Rabbanan say, therefore, midlohe is meshavedo. So I will say, watch this. So the Rabbanan say that since halacha lemaisa, I'd have no problem lying to the son of the creditor. Therefore, when I say that I paid back 500 and still owe 500, the Rabbanan say, that's like returning a lost object. You're for sure believed. Because since in a case like this, people would have absolutely no problem lying. Therefore, if you don't lie, halacha lemaisa, we believe you. So I will say, so again, halacha lemaisa, how do we paskin with this? So the Shulchan Aruch, this is again in Choshen Mishpat, Simen Ayin Hei Sif Gimel says the following. Im lo tavo adam, elahu atzma omer. So I will say, if no one claimed against me, no one came to me claiming any money, but I admitted on my own volition, mana haya la'avicha biyadi, v'nasati lo chamishim, v'nishlo lo chamishim, I borrowed $1,000 from your father, I paid back $100, but I still owe him $100. What is that halacha? Potter af mishvuas hesis. The halacha is, I do not have to take a shvua. I am believed. Why? Because in this case, we paskin like the Rabbanon, that in a case like this, I'm treated like a meshiv aved. I'm treated like returning a lost object, and my claim that I paid half and still have half to pay is absolutely believed. Says the Mishnah. Ha'edim sha'amru k'sav yadeinu huzeh, aval anu sim hayinu. Supposed to listen to this. We're going to get now into the interesting sugya of kiyum shtaros. Rashi says, Ha'idim sha'amru, shari mi'idim al-chasim asam l'kaim v'sashah. So listen to this. So I go ahead, I show up in Beis Din with a document that says that Reuven owes me $1,000. So if Reuven's a smart guy, he's going to say, okay, silver, that's very nice, but you see you have two witnesses that are signed on the shtar. How do I know who they are? Right? How do I know that those are actually legitimate witnesses? So there's something called kiyum shtaros, where we essentially uphold, not uphold, but certify the signatures of the witnesses. Now that could occur in a variety of different ways. The edim themselves could go ahead and testify about their signatures, or if we already have a certified document in the records of Beis Din, if these signatures match those signatures, that could also be mekayim the shtar. So in this case over here, Reuven brings the shtar that I bring the shtar that Reuven owes me $1,000 to Beis Din. The witnesses' signatures are the witnesses show up and they say, yes, these are our signatures, but aval anusim hayinu, we were compelled, we were forced to sign this shtar. So therefore, again, we did not testify that the contents of the shtar are actually accurate. We were forced. Or ketanim hayinu, or we were minors at the time we signed the shtar. Or psule edus hayu, or we were pasul edus, meaning we were related to one of the parties. Whatever the case is, the halacha is hari ilu ne'emanim. So the witnesses are believed. Rabbi said, because again, pesha asar hu pesha hitir. In this case, again, since they are the ones who are certifying their signatures, they are also the ones who are permitted to say that lemaisa, again, the signatures are really fraudulent. They're not good. However, v'miyesh edim shuk sav yadam, o shay ksav yadam yotzei makam acher, ilu ne'emanim. But if we have outside certification of their signatures, i.e. other witnesses showed up to certify their signatures, or we know that we compare their signatures to signatures on other documents and that's how we certify it, then Abbo said then they are not believed to qualify and to say that we were fraudulent witnesses. So we're going to say like this. When is this true, says Rami Bar Chama, that if their signatures are certified from another source, that they are not believed? That's only in a case where they say that we were anusim machmas mamon. That what happened? That somebody was threatening us financially. That someone told us that if we don't go ahead and sign on the shtar, they're going to steal our money. Aval anusim hayinu machmas nefashos hari elu ne'emanin. But Rabbi Yosef, if someone said that we signed on the shtar because someone threatened our life, then even if their signatures were corroborated from an outside source, they are believed to qualify their testimony. So Gemara says, really? Amrli Rava. Rava said, is that true? Kol kamine? Do we really believe them? Kevan shegit shuvin echozer magid. We will say there's a klal in testimony, which is that once you give testimony, what? You're done. You can't retract. You can't recant. V'chi temahani mili alpeh. Maybe that's, maybe you'd say that's only true with verbal testimony. Aval bishtar lo. But written testimony, we'll say, what's written testimony? Written testimony is when you sign your name, right? It's on a shtar, right? When you sign your name on a shtar, that's written testimony. So maybe the inability to recant is only by verbal testimony, but by written testimony, perhaps you can. The Ha'amar Eish Lakish, Eish Lakish said, Eidim achasumin al ashtar, na'aseh k'mishenech gara edusan bebeizdin. But yet, Eish Lakish said, that Rabbi said, when somebody signs on a shtar, it's as if they have given testimony, and their testimony has been examined and cross-examined in Beis Din. In other words, that when you sign on a shtar, that is no different than giving verbal testimony in a court of law. And therefore, in the same way in a court of law, kevan shehigid, shuv eino chozer magid, once you give your testimony, you cannot retract and recant. So too, when you sign a shtar, you're done. You're done. Once you've signed it, you've lent validity to what's written in the shtar, and you can't come back later. Well, say, can you imagine if every single person had the ability to come back and to say, oh, by the way, that wasn't true? You totally erode the believability or reliability of shtaros. So the same way in a court of law, once you give your testimony, you're done, that's it. And when you sign a shtar, you're done, that's it. Eliki Itmar, the Gemara says, right, we have to reverse what we said. Eliki Itmar, Reisha Itmar. Rather, that statement of Rami Bar Cham was actually made on the first case of the Mishnah. Hare Elu Ne'emanin. These are believed. They are believed. So Amar Rabbi Chama, so we'll say, remember, when are they, this is about the first case of the Mishnah, where witnesses show up and witnesses say, yes, that was our signature, but we were forced to sign. We were forced to sign. So the Gemara says, what does that mean? Lo shanu ela sha'amru anu sin hayinu machmas nefashos. Oh, if they said we were literally under the penalty of death. So we'll say, if somebody threatens you with either death or signing a fraudulent shtar, so what do you do? You sign the fraudulent shtar. It's not a kasha. So if somebody comes along and says, look, that is my signature, but somebody threatened me to kill me if I didn't sign it, okay, we accept that claim. Watch this. Aval amnu anusin hayinu machmas mamon. But if someone said, I had to sign that shtar because someone threatened me financially, then what? Then what? Ein ne'emonin. We do not believe that claim. My timer, why don't we believe that claim, says the Gemara? Says the Gemara, the Ein Adam Mesim Atzmo Rasha. because a person is not believed to do something or to say something that would portray them as a Rasha. Look at Rashi. Ein adam esim atzmo Rasha. Eino ne'eman lifsol etz atzmo mechaz kaso. Dekarav hu etzel atzmo v'karav pasal edes. So also, listen to this. The idea is that halacha l'maisa, you are not permitted to save your own money at the expense of someone else's money. So if somebody threatened me with financial loss, if I don't go ahead and sign a fraudulent shtar, I have absolutely no halachic right to do that. My money is no more important than your money. So if a person threatens his life to sign a fraudulent shtar, you sign it. But if a person's threatened with financial repercussions, if they don't sign the fraudulent shtar, I'm not permitted to sign it. I will say, so therefore, what's the chap? So watch this. So it says the Mishnah, witnesses show up in Beis Din and say, yes, that's our signature, but to be honest, the document actually is not true. The events that described here didn't occur, but somebody threatened us that if we didn't sign it, they take away our money. So the Gemara says, when they make a claim like that, we don't believe them. Why don't we believe them? Because in Adam Mesim Esas Rasha, we're going to continue with this in the next staff, that a person is not believed to say things that cast them as a halachic Rasha. So saying that I signed a document to save my own money at the expense of someone else's money is a Maiser Rishus. It's inappropriate and illegal. Therefore, the person is not believed. Now, Bosan, I'll tell you something interesting. Now, if you look at Rashi, once more, then with this we'll stop. What's the mechanics of Ein? Now, we're all familiar with this concept of Ein Adam Esim Esatzmo Rasha. But what are the mechanics of this concept? This is amazing. Rashi says, Ein Ne'ema Lifsal Esatzmo Miches Kaso. A person is not believed to say something that would invalidate their cheskas kashrus. Why? Dikarov hu etzel atzmo. Because they will say, you know why? Why am I not believed to make myself into an apostle? Because I am related to myself. I am a karov. They will say, just like karov, right? Krovim. I was going to say kruvim, but no, krovim. So krovim, right? Relatives are not permitted to give testimony about each other. Guess what? Who is my closest relative? Right? Me. I am karov etzel atzmo, therefore I am not believed to give a negative testimony about myself. Therefore, the karov etzel atzmo, the karov pasul eidus. Sefer Rabbos is amazing. Now again, if I give testimony that supports my already existing cheskas kashrus, that's believed. But to give testimony about myself that erodes and negates my cheskas kashrus, to that I am not believed. Ein adam esim es atzmo rasha. Therefore, the Gemara understands that the reisha of the Mishnah is talking about a case where the witnesses show up and they say, yes, that's our signatures. But we were compelled. That has to be a case of where they were compelled under the threat of death. If they say that, then we believe them. But if they were say that we were compelled to sign because of financial pressure, then we do not believe that claim because in other Mesa Masatsmo Russia. Shikoyach. Yeah.